that even though we don't want to say that on the air, just before the interview, and it stays between you and us, that we have a different perspective than crosstalk.
Oh, okay.
Okay. You know,
I haven't even really read crosstalk that much.
Yeah. There are things that are interesting in it, and I think that, I mean, I'm not going to be against anybody who does a magazine. You know, we need it so much. But the reason why we did one us is because we didn't relate to most of the other transsexual, transgender magazines that were out there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
any other community, we're diverse. You know, I mean, seriously, we have, and there's room for people like Cross Talk, there's people like Gender Trash and Transistor and TNT.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, just out of curiosity, though, not having really read Cross Talk at all, how do you find Cross Talk and how do you guys differ from it?
Well, this is something we knew you'd probably ask.
Well, actually, we're not even recording right now. This is just my curiosity.
Yeah. Okay.
There
are things we like about it. There are things we don't. I mean, I cannot say in general. I mean, if we look at some specific articles, there are things that have been published and that we've got problems with. And there's a lot of, like, girly things, you know, like garter belt trips and things like that.
Mm. At the same time, first of all, Crosstalk is put out by Kimberly Richards is a transgenderist. Mm-hmm. Not a transsexual,
yeah,
and that is a significant. That's a significant difference right there. You know, so we're starting there. That you go, it goes on.
They publish every month too, which means that they you know, they have to work fast, and they get some stuff sometimes that's not that good. I mean, to our point.
I mean, because we have the time to sit back and edit it and like refine it and you know, do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Also the other significant. Another interesting difference is that she's from LA and works out of LA, so that's bound to have a difference.
I think also traditionally a lot of transsexual and transgender magazines were not very political and were not very politically articulated and were not able to talk with feminists, with the rest of the gay community, etc., because they didn't have this background. Many of them came from a straight man background and turned after to be transsexual lesbian or transgender lesbian, etc., or straight heterosexual crossdresser. And I think that traditionally a lot of magazines were in that direction, and that's why we did one, because we had a background of identifying as gay man, bisexual, etc.,
and also radical and political.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And I think, but now though, I think Crosstalk and many other magazines, because three magazines came out during the last year and a half. There's Transistor, there's Journal of Transsexual Feminism. There's also TNT Transsexual News Telegraph that comes from San Francisco, and Gender Trash here in Canada. And the three of us are very political, and I think that some other magazine like Crosstalk or Tapestry are seeing that, you know, there's a need for that, and they're trying to slowly get into the political debate and be more political. So they're in the good direction.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, a similarity, an interesting point is that Crosstalk, what they do, Kimberly contacted us because she found our names in Queer Zine Explosion, and so she regularly contacts others who appear in that magazine. So she's trying to make... recognizing the differences, at the same time, we have similarities too.
Mm-hmm.
And, we're in contact with her. And
just an example of how we're different, just an anecdote, is she wanted to give us a list of distributor, and she, after reading two of our issues, she sent a letter saying, well, I think that I find maybe I have four or five I can give you, but the other one, I think you're a bit too political for them. So they would carry her, but they would not carry us. So, but right now, we're going to have a lot of changes for the next issue. We're going to try to be a bit more relaxed because we need more money back. So, because we've been very poor. We did it sort of like a zine.
A political zine.
A political alternative zine. And now we paid a lot of money, and now we need to have more money back. So we need to satisfy our biggest various people, you know, more various people, and also reach the ones who have money, which are not the ones who are anarchist, transsexual, etc.
Well, it's interesting that we got us talking about politics right away, because I wanted to start this off by saying, Xanthra, when you did your little piece for, I'm not sure if it was extra.
Are we recording now?
Yeah. Oh, I've been recording.
When did we start recording?
I recorded this whole thing, but where it actually starts when we go on the air, I'll establish later.
Okay. Will we get involved with that? Sure.
Okay. We can do that.
Okay. We're going to negotiate.
Well, yeah, we'll negotiate. We want to discuss. I may be able to take this back piece off, or front piece off, and stick it on the back. It's amazing what the power of technology allows you to do.
We did that once. We hope you deal with good equipment.
Yes, I do, actually.
Oh, that's good. We did a radio show once, and the equipment was very lousy, and it was a nightmare.
Yeah, it was a year ago. We did one for Pride Day for CKLN, and it was a real. Oh, the equipment kept on breaking down, and eventually, when they played it, the tape machine wouldn't play.
So they didn't play us at the time we were supposed to be played. They played us at another time, and they didn't have enough time to include the whole thing, so they cut all the songs that we got recorded, especially for that, from a transsexual dyke who was a guitar player here, plus some. We had to shorten the interview. It was awful.
Oh, well. No, actually, UBC, I mean, they have an incredible foundation of funding here, because they take about, the Alma Mater Society here takes about $50 per student, I think. And there's 30,000 students in this school, so it works out to like millions of dollars, a lot of which the station gets. So it is extremely, we have two fully equipped production studios, and
I'm gonna move there,
it's really quite phenomenal. Yeah. What kind
We're
of equipment
about moving
we have.
To Vancouver, so seems to be so like a rich city.
Is there a transsexual radio show yet?
This is the only one.
It's gay,
lesbian, bisexual, and transsexual. But I try and get transsexuals on as much as possible, just because, you know, there's another lesbian show and there's another gay show, so I try and get bisexual and transsexual on more, because but it's hard not being a transsexual myself, so I have people who I can get ideas from, but I can't actually do it from personal experience. Yeah. Bisexual I can do from personal experience.
So you're bi?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Sorry?
I hope you don't. I hope we haven't outed you on the air.
No, not at all. No, I've outed myself several times. But anyway, so back to politics. Mm-hmm. You mentioned in Extra West that what you were seeing was the start of the transgender rights movement. And it's not something that I think is really visible in Vancouver yet, but I'm curious as to what you're seeing starting up in Toronto and in the States, which I imagine you're in contact with, which you would define as the start of this movement.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely
happening.
Well, I'm trying to think of it at a ground level. Mm-hmm. For instance, officially, there's a Transgender Nation out of San Francisco. As Mira mentioned earlier, there's the three magazines of which we're one. So there's Gender Trash, there's Trans Sisters, and there's TNT.
Plus all the other ones also want, maybe not directly political, but still are doing some good work.
Political issues are starting to become very important, as opposed to a while ago when transsexuals were just seen and not heard.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're starting to, we want control over our lives, just like I said. I think that's the best way to say it. We want control over our own lives, period.
Mm-hmm. We see also transsexuals around us who are much more articulated politically, and I think one of the things that was reproached to the transsexual community for so long, and the reason why we were not in the political arena, is that we were not political and we were not articulated, and we were not able, for example, when feminists were attacking us, genetic feminists, to stand, fight back and say what you're saying doesn't make sense because of that. And I think more and more transsexuals now are acquiring, can you say that in English? Acquiring a political consciousness
and awareness.
And are able to be articulated and discussed with feminists, lesbians, gays, and straights, liberal, left-wing straights. So I think we definitely see it on an individual basis, but we can also see it by things that are going on, like the transsexuals were starting to do videos. We did one last year.
Actually, it got shown in Vancouver, Gender Troublemakers.
Yeah.
At Queer City.
The other thing that's happening, too, is the magazine, the videos. And I think that right now, you know, transsexuals traditionally, when they published books, it was always autobiographies.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that got reproached to us, and all the people who were doing theory about us and everything were always genetic people. And, there's Leslie Feinberg who published a book. Now there's
Kate Bornstein's book.
There are at least two or three other transsexual lesbians who are in the process of writing books, too.
Yeah.
So, and are not just autobiography.
But talking about transsexuality itself, something that we've always been regarded as not being able to talk about, which is sort of an interesting thing, that transsexuals who are transsexuals were never felt to be, by genetics, to be qualified to speak about transsexuality itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of what I said about taking control over our own lives, is also being able to speak on our own behalf without needing others to speak for us.
Mm-hmm. Transsexuality has traditionally been defined by both the psychiatric institutions and a part of the radical feminist lesbian movement that were saying that a part of the lesbian feminist movement was saying that transsexuals were just male who wanted to take over the women's movement and were raping women by stealing their creativity, their spaces, their energy, their spirituality, etc. And on the other side, so they were defining us that way.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side, we have the psychiatric institution who were defining us as mentally ill. So now I think we're starting to do pressure on both those institutions, the psychiatric institutions and the feminist community, to say, well, whoa, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. To the psychiatric institution, well, we're not mentally ill. You're going to have to change the criteria that are required for us to get our surgery and our hormones and everything. And to the feminist community, well, wait a minute, we're men, you know, let's talk here.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think a good example of that too is that one of the good examples that we're getting political is that there are, for the third year, transsexuals were at Michigan, you know, so that I find it the big political thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, actually, they were let in knowingly.
Yes.
No one transsexuals actually entered the fairgrounds.
Yes,
this year,
openly so. Transsexual women were allowed to enter the festival,
mm-hmm.
and 12 were there total, but some stayed outside and some went in.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people are doing political. Transsexuals are plotting political actions a bit all over.
And
I think as far as North America goes, okay,
I mean,
talk about the rest.
And also with in New York with Stonewall, there was the transsexual menace group that was fighting for dealing with transsexuality as distinct from, but still having common goals with lesbians and gays, and being a part of Stonewall, but not necessarily, and working that out.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing, basically what we're seeing is a real upsurge all across this continent, and from what we can gather, we're getting it in Europe and everywhere else. There's a lot of changes in how transsexuals are.
I think we're not as scared as we used to be. I think one of the reasons we haven't been discussing on a table on an equal basis with feminists, the psychiatric institutions, et cetera, and the lesbian gay communities, is that we were scared and we thought that we were not able to speak for ourselves. We thought we were not even sure about what we were and everything. And I think that now our identities are starting to be clear in our heads, and we can talk and we're not scared anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We've got nothing to lose. That's the whole point.
What do you think are the biggest obstacles that you guys have to tackle right now, aside from the obvious transgender phobia or whatever you might want to call it, the sort of mass hysteria that's out there, in terms of legal issues?
Almost everything.
Yeah, they're a little bit different from gay and lesbian.
Not just a little, a hell of a lot different.
Okay, a lot different.
In every single facet of our lives, it affects us.
Mm-hmm.
Legally, I mean, just when you want to go to the bathroom, this can be a mess, you know. I think that people don't realize that when simple things as going to the bathroom it becomes something complicated where anytime somebody can spot you and say, I don't want you here, and call the police, and then you have to argue and bring this apart, like, you know, going to the swimming pool. I mean, just simple things of life like pissing and shitting can be a problem. So imagine the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get into things like name change and, you know, IDs and all kind. But it literally is every single facet of our lives is affected. Our relationship with other people, whether, mm-hmm. you know, straight, lesbian, gay, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There's not one single area where it doesn't affect us.
Legally.
Yeah, and it's fascinating, actually, because earlier I was talking to Barbara Finley, who's a prominent gay rights lawyer in this town, and we were just discussing the federal government social policy review, and she used, as an example of what we need to do in terms of Medicare reform, she used as an example the fact that currently the gender reassignment surgery is not covered under Medicare because it's performed in a clinic and not a hospital.
Well, it's regarded as what's the term?
Cosmetic.
Cosmetic surgery. Optional or, you know,
mm-hmm. Something that has to do with cosmetic surgery. What's very interesting is that they make us go through years of therapy and very strong, because we're talking about the gender identity clinic, because if it's going to get paid, you have to pass by one of the big gender identity clinics of this country. And what's interesting is that they make us pass all those psychological tests, psychiatric tests. We're under medical supervision for several years before they give us the okay, and then they say it's not a medical thing, it's a cosmetic thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, like, okay, Vancouver is different, say, than Montreal and Toronto.
Yeah.
Like, Montreal and Toronto are extremely, the gender identity clinics are extremely negative towards transsexuals.
Really?
Oh,
yeah.
Very much so. That it used to be that if you declared yourself to be a lesbian, transsexual lesbian, you could pretty well forget it.
Yeah.
It's only recently changing.
Yeah, they're trying to adapt themselves now because a lot of gender identity clinics realize that 50% of their clients are identify as lesbians and gays. So if they don't want them, they're going to lie and pretend that they're going to want to be straight after the surgery, but they won't be. And I think that the Vancouver Gender Identity Clinic has a very good reputation, so many transsexuals are thinking about moving there because the program is only a year,
mm-hmm.
Whereas some places it's 3 years.
Oh, that's fascinating. I had no idea. And
oh,
I live
yeah,
here.
It depends on where you are,
yeah.
And, you know, like, and if how well you get along with the people in there. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's
how much you're ready to lie. Point you're ready to lie.
How well, like in Toronto, definitely, how well you pass.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, do you fit that, the doctor's images of what
a woman
should be, should
yeah.
look like? And if you don't, you don't get it.
I got totally scrapped from, I went to the gender identity clinic in Montreal, I think it's about 4 or 5 years ago, something like that, and I had my head shaved. I was living as sort of an androgynous boy at the time, and I had my head shaved, and I was wearing some very weird androgynous, I just looked like a weird arty fart dyke, you know, and I went there, and they really freaked out, and they were asking me what I wanted to be, and I said, I want to be a feminist, and I want to be a lesbian, and I want to be that, and I want to be that, and they didn't like it. The same day they told me I wouldn't be in their program, and they tried to prove me I was schizophrenic and paranoid, and things like that.
One other interesting thing about Medicare, which, get back to that,
mm-hmm.
In Toronto, and I think in Vancouver, it's, what if you go through the clinic, the gender identity, whatever, clinic program, and they pass you, if they say you're okay and you can get your surgery,
mm-hmm.
and the provincial plans will, quote, reimburse you for that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they want to reimburse you for your airfare because you'll have to fly out.
Mm-hmm.
From Vancouver, the closest is Menard and Montreal, but there's also England and other places. And now I do know that in Vancouver, someone had welfare pay for her SRF. But generally speaking, it's a reimbursement plan.
Hmm.
So in other words, you still have to come up with the money. And we're talking, well, Menard, which is the cheapest, not including airfare and hospital and stay in the clinics or clinic, hospital, wherever,
aftercare.
You're looking at $7,000 to $8,000.
Hmm.
And in Quebec City, there's one at the same price.
Same,
and
yeah.
If you go to Barber, it's 12,000 and up, and
14,000, I think, or something
yeah,
like that.
And if you go to
England is expensive as well. So I do understand that some people who go to Dalrymple in Britain via the Clark, what he's willing to do is wait for OHIP to do it, to pay, you know, like to, quote, reimburse him.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll, you know, in other words, they'll pay, but it's sort of a subterfuge sort of thing.
I see.
But, so in other words, you just have to come up with the airfare, the hotel, because you have to stay there for, have a hotel room for 3 weeks in England, plus drugs, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, transsexuals, as far as the medical community, are an incredible cash cow. I mean, they look at us and they're just chalking up how much they're going to make off of us. Well, you know, the drug companies, off of the hormones, the psychiatrists to evaluate us.
The electrologists.
The electrologists.
Even if we love them, we're happy they're there. You know
even for good ones, they're making a fortune off of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's an interesting part of it, too, when you talk about Medicare. And
Now, it's fascinating, Mira, because you were talking earlier about, you know, knowing that you wanted to be a dyke and a feminist and this kind of thing. And, I mean, do you see the transgender issue as a women's issue? Because I seem to feel like I have, like, a minority viewpoint sometimes. Like, a lot of women seem to feel that transsexuals are men that want to be women.
Yeah.
And I tend to look at it as though, well, you know, a transsexual is somebody who is a woman who was born into the wrong body.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't, you know...
What about the transsexual man?
Okay, and... Sorry, or a...
I'm sorry.
A woman who was born into a male body or a man who was born into a woman's body. It goes both ways. But I just think, you know, as a woman, I can't imagine a worse thing. You know, knowing the way I identify myself and all the things that I value and I'm proud of, to be born with a penis.
Mm-hmm.
And
not a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I'm thinking to myself, like, you know, on top of all this trauma, you know, us women and feminists, aren't we not just, like, kicking ourselves by not helping out?
Yeah, I think a lot of... Right now, because we're able to talk with feminists and say, look, you know, they accuse us traditionally of having male privilege, and right now what we're doing is showing, not on a theoretical level, but practically what we have and what they have, and we have much less than they do, you know, and in that sense, I think there's a start of a communication with certain, I think there's a lot of genetic women who just don't want to have anything to do with us and accuse us of asking them, and once again, it's one of the thing that the women at the Vancouver women's bookstore said is, why is it always women who have to take in transsexuals? You know, why do we always have to include everybody? And I think that yes, they should include us, because I think anybody who's transgender, whether they go from male to female or female to male, we have a very a special complex. A perspective about gender, and that's what feminism is all about, you know, it's about gender and about gender inequalities and all that, and I think that therefore we should work hands in hands. I think that we have a lot to learn from feminism and from the women's movement, and I think that the women's movement and feminists have a lot to learn from us too. And just now I think that the problem is just to find some feminists who are ready to sit with us and talk, and find some transsexuals who are able to talk with them, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, actually, you mentioned the Vancouver Women's Bookstore, and they would not allow gender trash to be distributed.
No, they have a collective, and they decided that... that they would not take it. Some of them said they would read it, but the majority of them said that they would not take it because... transsexual as men are homophobic. Transsexuals are homophobic because as men they deny their attraction to men. First, second, transsexuals have stereotypical images of what women are like, are and what they are. You know, like makeup, dresses, etc., etc. And third, because it's always women who have to take in other groups. And I think that you know, as far as the first one goes. We both lived as gay men before. We were out and active as gay men in the gay community, and we never denied our attraction to men. And this also is denying that 50% of male to female transsexuals identify as lesbians and don't want to have anything to do with men, not because they're scared of being identified as gay, because they're not sexually attracted to them.
Mm-hmm.
And the second point, I mean, if you would look at Zantra, she wears cowboy's boots with jeans and camisoles and no makeup, and me the same. We're two slobs. We just dress
up. Well, not quite slobs.
We dress up badly.
But we do not look like stereotypical.
Not at all.
And the the other thing about the stereotypical appearance, I find it a little bit wild that women would comment about transsexuals being wearing stereotypical or having a stereotypical feminine appearance, when so many women, and far more women than transsexuals, go through the same thing.
Yeah, I think that as far as the stereotypical feminine image goes, I think that we have to look at who produces those stereotypical image, and they're men, and it's, you know, the patriarchy, as they call it, you know, and if it oppresses genetic women, you know, because it forces them to reach the standards of beauty, to have all those cosmetic surgery and makeup. Well, what about transsexual? We spend thousands of dollars in electrolysis to get rid of our hair. We spend thousands of dollars in cosmetic surgery to look like that. And we don't do it because we find it fun. We do it because the society is oppressive and is telling us that we have to do it. And if we don't do it, but then they're gonna say, you're man, you're man, you're man. So I think that instead of accusing transsexuals of perpetuating those stereotypes, we have to start looking as those stereotypes are also oppressing transsexuals.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very fascinating statement, actually. And it also, another thing that makes it fascinating is that the Vancouver Women's Bookstore was opposed to you, I mean, partly because of the stereotype thing and partly because the privilege, the male privilege, because I hear this as a bisexual too. Like, bisexuals have a heterosexual privilege.
I don't know about bisexuals, but I suspect as soon as you out yourself, you lose that privilege fast. It just plummets.
Yeah, and
it certainly does for us, because, like, we both live as women, which means we earn 60% of what men do. We can be fired from any job, and we have no recourse.
I don't have
unless
a full job anymore. I work as a prostitute, you know, it's a big privilege.
But the point is, mainstream jobs, they can fire us, and unless they are, covered by the Canadian Human Rights Code, in other words, the federal government, or some other institutions that are just monitored by that, we have no recourse whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they say, you know, like the Ontario Human Rights won't do a thing about us, and even if they did, it would still take 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what I wanted to say is I think that once you live as a woman, you lose those male privileges right away, and because I think that it's different for every transsexual. Some of them really succeeded to do a good job as male and were passing well as male and maybe had some kind of male privilege, but it's not in every case. Some people have never been able to pass as men and therefore had not the privilege of a male and didn't even have, because they were considered to be those weirdos, didn't even had the privilege of a woman, so they had less privilege, which is like very little. So yeah, that's that.
Mm-hmm. And I think another thing that comes up about this privilege thing is that different, you know, gay activist groups and feminist activist groups look down upon, you know, bisexuals because of the heterosexual privilege, and I suppose transsexuals because of the quote male privilege. And it raises the question of, you know, are we to despise somebody because somebody happens? I can't help the fact that I'm bisexual. I can't help the fact, you know, that, you know, maybe occasionally it might be easier for me, you know, to go around in life. I would argue that. But I mean, you know, it's as though they would like me to identify as gay just to make it harder for myself so I can be respected more or something like that. I mean, this is what you and I both are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're transsexual, and you can't help the fact that at some point you were in male bodies, and I can't help the fact that, you know, like, why are we despising one another? Because
there's someone who said something very interesting. Her name is Janice Walworth. She's a genetic feminist who's an ally of the transsexual ally of the transsexual women who are going to Michigan every year, and she's been a feminist and fighting patriarchy for so many years, and she says that every time somebody raises the question of male privilege and transsexual, she says, you know, which one of us, especially the ones of us who are like feminist academician, didn't use some male privilege at a certain point? She said that, for example, she went to college with the money of her father, who was using, of course, male privilege, and I think that, and she thinks that the important thing is that you use those privileges that you can get a bit here and there to use it for a good cause, which is, in that case, to use it for women's empowerment and women's development.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe what we bis and transsexuals should do is ally themselves or work together, because it seems they have both common ground in that they're both being excluded by lesbians and gays, as well as straights.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fascinating that you should say that, because we talked about that, Mira and I, before when we talked on the phone a couple days ago about the bisexual and transsexual communities uniting. The one problem is I'd like somebody to show me where the bisexual community is in Vancouver. I haven't found it yet.
Yeah. Well, transsexuals have about as many places as bis have places to go.
Yeah. So our community is dispersed a bit here, a bit there,
yeah.
A little supper once in a while.
There's no bi bars anywhere or bi baths or anything like that.
Well, there was one in Montreal, I would say. What I would call a bisexual bar is a bar where you have all kinds of people. You have gay men, you have straight men, you have lesbians, you have straight women, and you have some bisexual and polysexual and people in between all of that. So I call this a bi bar. There's not a lot, though. There was one in Montreal, and it's closed now, so
certainly
nothing
there
left.
There certainly wasn't one in Toronto.
No, I know.
Mm-hmm. But now, I mean, certainly, you know, the transsexual rights movement seems to have been pushed off to the side by the gay and lesbian movement. But, I mean, is there not a lot of common ground here that we could be working together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Zentra, go first.
Okay. The part of the problem is that historically, well, what's interesting is that a lot of what might be our history or might not be, I don't, that we can work out later, has been taken over by both gays and lesbians. And I'm, hello? Yeah, my phone is going.
Uh-oh. I'll go ahead. One of the problem, I think, that if we want to do coalition with, if the transsexual transgender community want to make coalition with the lesbian and gay community, we'll have to sit and say clearly what are the problems. And there are some problems, and we should not deny it if we want to have productive ends to that, you know, a productive coalition. So one of those problems that our history and histories have been reclaimed by the lesbian and gay communities as lesbians and gays. And this is a big area where we would like lesbians and gays to acknowledge that it doesn't necessarily belong to them. It may not belong to us either, but we have to find out to who it belongs and if it belongs to someone.
Mm-hmm. One other thing, it's interesting you should mention that, because right now in the state of Washington, there are those two motions to pretty well, one of them is really atrocious. It's to really subjugate lesbians, gays, and it doesn't mention bisexuals specifically, but it's definitely
included.
They're included,
yeah.
And transsexuals as well. And this is an area where we can definitely work together.
But
this is an area
this
where
is an
we
example
can
of how, even if often the lesbian and gay communities leave us out and don't talk about our issues and don't care about us, when the bigots attack them, they also attack us at the same time. And they also attack bisexuals at the same time.
Yeah, they don't we're just going after lesbians and gays, and we're not going to touch bisexuals and transgender
people. We're thrown
people
in the same bag with them, and therefore suffer the same thing, or even worse. But when it comes to like trying to get something positive, like we're left out.
Mm-hmm. Well, to go back to Washington, there were two transsexual groups, one working against that legislation, and one was working within a lesbian and gay group, and the other was working independently of any lesbian and gay group. So this is
yes,
an example.
There was a caucus. There was a lesbian and gay group that was working against one of those. How do you call them?
Legislation.
Legislation that they were trying to pass, and there was a. Then they formed a couple of transsexual and transgender people started a caucus inside the lesbian and gay group, and then there's another group of transsexual who decided that they felt they could not be well represented being part of a caucus inside the lesbian and gay thing, so they decided to do their own things on in their own way.
So mm-hmm. as far we don't have all the details about how well it worked or not. But I would imagine something worked. And,
yeah. This is a good example of transsexuals starting to be political, and this is also a good example of transsexuals standing on their own two feet, and also in one of the two cases working in coalition with lesbians and gays.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about the whole argument that, say, I was talking to Jamie Lee Hamilton of Fate out here. Do you know Jamie?
Yeah, we know her.
Yeah, and she was saying that probably around 50% of transsexuals, at least in Vancouver, identify also as gay and lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
So are we maybe sort of like, you know, twisting the arms of the other 50% who are straight and saying, you know, is it wrong to want to identify these people with the gay and lesbian movement?
Yeah. Well, this 50% of the transsexual community who identify as heterosexual, I think that, traditionally they've had a lot of big problems because any time transsexuals would try to do links with the lesbian and gay community, they'd be very upset. And we still see a lot of that, especially in Quebec. And I think that it's something that needs to be worked out. There's not an easy answer. I think that though some of them are starting to realize that they are also under attack, and they realize that the lesbian and gay community has more power than us right now, and that it's maybe a good idea to get into their groups to work, you know, because they got more resources than us, and for the moment, you know, it's better than nothing to work with them than to work alone.
I think it's fascinating, too, because really the history of the gay and lesbian movement and the history of the transsexual movement both sort of have a common ground in the question of male and female roles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the gay and lesbian liberation movement has had a lot to do with questioning what the stereotypical and challenging stereotypical male and female roles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they, at the same time, they only deal with male and female like as if they're two genders.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where it really breaks down, because when you get into transgender, and this includes transsexual here, all of a sudden your gender is much more complicated.
Some people identify as a third gender. Some people may live as male to female, but still identify as polygender too. So I think that right now we're seeing also an emergence of gender polymorphism.
I'm curious about that. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah. Well, I think that traditionally what happened is that if you wanted to be a transsexual, you had to pass from one clear gender to another clear gender. So transsexuals, again, had to fit in other people's definition and frames.
So they go from one,
from them.
As one person said, you go from one prison to another.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
And I think that now there are more, because we're getting more articulate, and we're asking our caregivers, that's what we want, and we won't take that shit. Some of us feel more free to say and express a more fluidity of gender. And Kate Bernstein even said that she thinks that some people have a fluidity of gender from an hour basis. Like 1 hour you feel like something, the other hour you feel like something else.
Oh my God! You mean there's bi-gender people too?
Polygender.
Yeah.
When you get into orientation, there are people who are specifically attracted to transsexuals. There are men who are attracted to and women who are specifically attracted to transsexuals as transsexuals. And, like, I mean, there are men who go out with us and with transsexuals, and they are definitely straight, and they do not identify as gay, and yet they're very attracted to, specifically to us as a separate orientation. So what's that?
In terms of being polygendered, I think that, for example, in my case, I definitely identify as a woman, and I live full-time as a woman. I pass very well as a woman, and I want to live the rest of my life as a woman. But I like to play, and I love dressing up like a man for fun, and I love dressing up as a man for maybe erotic adventures and things like that, but it's a game, you know, that's how I see it. And I feel that inside me there's a very strong dyke, and inside of me there's also a little shy boy inside of me, and there's also probably a granola woman, you know, there's all kinds of gender in me, and I think that what we have to do is we have to live under one. Obviously, in my everyday life, I have to be practical and choose one that I can show people and say, this is that. You know, that's how you call me, that's how you relate to me. But when it comes to myself and in my intimacy and playing and all that, there's much more than that.
Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating, too, because the whole issue of hermaphrodites come into this, which is there are actually people who were born.
Yes, there are. Yeah. And then you get into intersexed.
Mm-hmm.
Which is another group with which we can do a coalition. I think many intersex people are reaching out to the transsexual community now because they have their own separate issues too, and we're doing links with them because we have a lot of similarities.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting talking to you because up until now, I mean, you know, gay, lesbian, bisexual have all been identities. You know, it's not only that you're a person who is attracted to women sexually and emotionally and, you know, therefore you're lesbian. It's people are identifying themselves
mm-hmm.
as lesbian, gay, bisexual politically, and this becomes a very important identity to maintain. And it sounds to me like maybe this is starting to take place in the transgender community too, where it's not, you know, it's not like you just want to be able to call yourself a woman and go on with your life. I mean, for some people, I imagine that's the case. But is it important for you to maintain an identity as a member of the gender community?
I think for our mental health, it's good to maintain one because I think that this society is so reluctant and oppressive for people who are going to be polygender that right now in this time we need. Personally, I need one. And I think Xantra, too, for her, she needs one, two specific, clear one that we show people and say, that's ours. But I think that a lot of people who are in the transgender community right now don't feel that way and are expressing a more fluid gender, you know. And one of the problems we have with the word transgender and the so-called transgender liberation movement is that it's starting to include such a wide range of people with different behaviors and identities
and issues and concerns.
And issues and concerns. You know, it can range from transsexuals to intersex people to a butch femme to a gay guy who wear lipstick and a skirt, and then they're going to do a video or write a book about him and say how he deals with gender and, you know, and all that thing, and transgender here and transgender there. And we feel that, you know, transsexuals have very specific legal issues, very specific health issues that are very serious. I mean, I can understand that you can be tortured when you're a gay guy and you need to wear a lipstick and a skirt once a week, you know, or if you're in a butch femme relationship. But I mean, we take hormones, we take pills, we get surgeries, you know, we do electrolysis, we spend thousands of dollars. We have very strong legal and health issues, and we feel that the so-called transgender liberation movement has a tendency to put us at the back of the line, you know, a
mm-hmm.
little bit, and we have to be very strong and say, no, we're going to stay on top of the line because we're probably the ones here who need the most resources and organization. And
also, we've been at the front of the transgender movement right from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
When the word transgender was first came up, was the first thing they were looking at, the groups they were looking at were transsexuals and transvestites,
mm-hmm.
And it was us. So, I think what I agree with Mira saying about how right now the transgendered movement seems to be so diverse it almost includes everybody.
I was just going to say people tend to use the words.
I mean, as a joke, I was saying, I'm just waiting for Preston Manning to declare himself a transgendered person. I mean, why not? Everybody else can.
Yeah.
You know, what about someone who wears an earring? A man who wears an earring could
write a book about being transgender. You know, it's like everybody's—it's such a hot issue and a trendy issue right now in the lesbian, genetic lesbian, and gay community, transgender and gender issues. That you know that this is becoming inclusive of anyone. You know, everybody's—we agree also that everybody, probably everybody in the society, go through certain transgender feelings. Up to a certain point, but some other people go through rougher transgender.
For some, it's easier than others. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing, and we're not trying to say that these people shouldn't be part of the transgender movement. They certainly are, or communities. They certainly are, but they have a completely different perspective, and they have a different issues and concerns. And just as we can't speak for them, they really can't speak for us. We need to identify each of our own individual concerns. And so one of the big issues within transgendered groups is the issue of community. What is it? How does it express?
How can we be inclusive of transsexual, lesbian, heterosexual, transsexual, heterosexual cross-dressers, lipstick, you know,
drag queens, drag kings,
men who wear lipstick, you know, butch femme, you know, and all that. How can we be inclusive of all that? Personally, I don't believe in it. I think that we can do a coalition of all that, but I don't think that there's such a nice, happy family together. Certainly, I don't relate to a lot of people who are included in that list I just gave you. And and I think I could probably work in coalition with a transvestite group or heterosexual crossdresser group, but that's as far as it can go. You know, their issues are not mine.
So when you write gender trash, you write it for transsexuals.
Transsexuals and gendered people who are close to, and that would include intersex people.
I would say that what we do is we want to have a very strong accent and most of the content being about transsexuality, but we are open to articles that deal more with transgender in a more fluid and general way.
Mm-hmm.
So we are very open, or in even just to gender issues in general. So, but we want to have the biggest part of the content being related to transsexuality. But we also want to include, you know, cross-dressers and transvestites and all that. And I think for some people, it's not easy to be a transsexual or a transvestite and deciding what they are. And it may change from one month to the other. You know, a couple of years ago, I identified as a transgenderist gay man, I identified bisexual. So at that time, I was already into transgender thing. But, you know, I changed, and now I'm a transsexual. So I think that we take very good care not to exclude people who are going through a process and who eventually may be transsexual.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, there are many people who might be thought of as transsexuals, but who identify themselves not as transsexuals, not even as transgendered, but some even would say that they're gay or that they're a transvestite, and leave it at that. And it's a very complicated and complex issue.
They live during the day. They look like women. They live as women. They pass for women. Their lovers are straight or bi, but they still think of themselves as gay. You know, so it all depends of where you are in the process of identification and labeling
and your background, and so gender trash is for all of.
It tries to be for all of that.
We're not trying to say, you know, you have to identify as a transsexual to read gender trash. That's not true.
No, that's not true.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and the one thing that I just discovered is that gender trash is really hard to get in Vancouver.
Oh, yeah.
That's because the last issue was about, when did it
come out? In January, so probably sold out.
Yeah,
we're doing. we're trying to find $600. We have two issues in advance already done. We just need to have to get $600 to get the first one printed, and then the money is going to come back for the other one. So it should arrive soon. And if you want the last one, we still have some here, so you can always order it directly from us.
I was just going to say, how do you subscribe?
Oh, no problem. You can
the address is. Gender Trash, 552 Church Street, Toronto, Ontario, M4Y2E3, phone number 1416 929 2350, and And you, for a regular issue, you send us a sample issue, you send us $6.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to include the price of the sampling and handling. Is it how you're sending
yes.
and handling? Is it how you call it? You get to excuse my accent sometimes. And yeah, it's going to be, you're going to receive an issue. And you can also receive, if you can send us money for 3 issues in advance or how many you want in advance.
Okay, and that's also the number and the address if you want to donate money to help you get your next issue
yes.
on the streets.
You can also get our video as well by sending
$30.
$30 plus $250 shipping and handling to the same,
same address.
That's gender. You can own your own copy of Gender Troublemakers.
Okay.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And plus we also have buttons.
Yeah, we have about 50 different buttons.
Okay.
Some are for specifically for transsexuals,
let's
some for transgender people.
Some are for bi.
Some
all
are for
right.
bi, and we also have yep. some for people who are not transsexuals or bi or anything but want to support transsexuals. Like we have one that says Feminist for Transgender Liberation with a light bulb behind. So, yeah.
Excellent.
And
yeah.
as far as getting new places in Vancouver, we would love to have that. Right now we're in Little Sister. Unfortunately, they obviously have sold out. We're trying for other places.
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll be in the Vancouver Women's Bookstore in the near future.
I don't think
but
we will.
At the same time, tell your listeners, you know, to feel free to go in and ask them for it.
You know,
why not? Because, okay. I mean, that's the really crazy part, is that we just wanted to sell our magazine there. That's it.
We don't want to be on the collective,
you know.
Yeah, it's not like we're asking.